So Jakub, thanks for coming for my show and welcome to Inside Nearshoring. Please be so kind to introduce yourself.
So my name is Jakub. I come from Twisto, which is a buy now pay later company currently in European markets. We were recently acquired by Zip. Where I come from, so my background was first of all freelancing, then I also moved to academia, so Czech Technical University and Charles University in Prague. This was a large part of my career. The main topics were topics like information security, blockchain, software development and data mining. Then I had my period of larger corporations, KPMG, Deloitte and Atos. This was really great regarding gaining some experience with larger clients and also how great or large organizations work. And then I moved to CreativeDoc. CreativeDoc is a company that just builds startups from scratch. So here it was my startup experience. And joining Twisto, basically bringing a successful local product to international markets. So this was my motivation, joining up with Victor, the CTO, and currently scaling the team from something 20 devs to 80 plus guys that we currently have.
Very impressive. Thanks a lot, Jakub. So as our show is all about the nearshoring, offshoring, development models and things like that, what is your relevance and relation to nearshoring? I am eager to know whether you are sometimes on a buyer side or sometimes maybe on a seller side. So how are you relevant to nearshoring?
Yeah, so I used to be on the other side, so on the side where you are right now. With freelancing, it was just getting my own clients. With companies KPMG, Deloitte and Atos, it was more consulting and also outsourcing, right? At CreativeDoc, we were either collaborating with nearshoring or even offshoring services, or we were providing our capacities to other clients. So usually we didn't just go for simple body shops or just reselling someone for some fee. But we did something like success fees. So basically the client was just paying for the delivery of the project and for the salaries of the people. But on top of that, if we set up all of the KPIs, open up a new market, or the product started to earn itself and we scaled it, then in the contract there was and there still is up to this day some success fee for reselling the business back, right?
Interesting. I'm you already give me insights on how we could adjust. But that's not something that I was planning to ask you. But if you were on the position we are now, and if I came to you offering you, let's say, an amazing team of some developers, very cool ones and so on and so on, and I said, you can pay smaller now, but I'm so that mature about my guys. In a year, if we accomplish this, I would get way more. Would you agree on that?
So at this point, I think it's a reasonable business model because I've seen it at CreativeDoc. At Twisto, it would be new to us. So we would need to think about how to structure the contact and also how to structure the KPIs, because now we are setting the KPIs only for ourselves, right? How would it be with another vendor? Maybe if Mobile Unity was responsible for launching one of the new markets. But it's a great model, right? Because we are currently also hiring teams, and we are preferring hiring teams at Twisto over individual developers. So this could be a nice partnership. So no promises here, but definitely something to explore, because at CreativeDoc it worked.
Perfect. Then it is interesting you mentioned that, and it was part of something I wanted to ask about. How would you ever measure a success of your remote team? So I understand there are some things internally when you work with the guys day to day, you see them, you participate brainstorming in your office in Prague and things like that. But for a remote team, how do you measure their success?
Mm-hmm. So probably the first thing I want to mention is that we don't make a difference between our internal teams and the ones that are provided by a third party, right? We are still like very heavy on culture. So for us, like you shouldn't make a difference, right? Even when looking the guys, like they are part of the same family and of the same team. The first thing is that we measure really the delivery or the basic units for measuring the delivery is a team. So we are like looking how the team delivers the individual guys or evaluation of their performance is up to the team lead or the engineering manager like managing multiple teams. Mm-hmm. The first phase for us is not just like a number of story points or something like velocity, etc. The first phase is really like expectation management. So there's always like we work in units where there's like a product owner, team lead, and a team of developers, and they are responsible for some area like, you know, risk products, car products, but maybe even a new market. And if like they manage the expectations properly, it means that like all of the stakeholders, so someone like waiting for delivery of particular initiatives, let it be like product, risk, or customer care, they are satisfied, right? And you can also see it because they like when the delivery begins, they make some estimates, and you can see like whether it fits the delivery or not, or whether still like everything is postponed and everyone is dissatisfied, or whether like they are improving in that and everyone is satisfied, right? And once we get to this level of like expectation management, then we can like deep dive into like the individual performance, right? Like why this team is maybe 10 regarding headcount and this one is 5 and they deliver about the same. But this is like the next phase, because at the beginning you really just want to make sure that like your internal customer kind of gets what they want, right? And maybe just like around the individual delivery, like we oftentimes use it more as a feedback to the individual developer, so that he kind of knows how to improve, right? But like we prefer like the qualitative metrics over the quantitative one, right? The quantitative is more like support what you are saying or what you want to say to the developer.
Yeah. Okay, this is clear. So my little summary over that part is. On the first stage, the estimate and delivery, how much they are. Mm-hmm. But what if one team estimates, so I don't know, like one basic thing, we'll do it in 10 hours or in 10 days, while other team says we can do it in 1 hour or 1 day. Can you, because our listeners are most likely the businesses thinking about nearshoring, and not always they know how exactly to then estimate the team who are that far away. How can they understand or verify the estimates are, let's say, reasonable?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like there are still multiple factors that come into it, right? Because, for example, we know that teams that are already onboarded deliver like much better than the ones that are new, right? So you can kind of expect that if the estimation would be done by one of your existing teams, it would be like much more positive than with the new team, right? And so like we still like prefer that the estimation is done like by the vendor or by the team that's actually like delivering the initiatives. I wouldn't say that we've ever like come to a moment when it would be like, you know, radically different, that it would be like that there would be like one estimate for 1 day and another one for like 20 or something like that, right? But I guess it's really like either like trust the vendor, because this is like super important, or like if you want to do like some peer assessment, this is like the qualitative way where you can like find out if one of your existing teams does the estimation as well, where are the differences, right? Because sometimes it could be caused that really they are like overvaluating the tasks, but as I mentioned, it never happens. Maybe the estimation is happening because they don't know yet the business that well. So for example, they don't know, okay, so like it's not just about the feature, but also some back office administration. Maybe also the deployment process and like turning on the feature flags takes some time, right? So there are like other tasks that maybe like the existing team like appreciates more than the vendor.
Okay, this is clear, thank you. Usually in Europe, we know for sure as being a vendor, Our typical client is Western European business doing some intent to get to Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. But you guys are already in Eastern Europe. Yeah. So you basically are near shore client to someone who is also in this Eastern Europe region. The question is, how do you, is it any kind of difference that the candidates know that their client is also from Eastern Europe? So might be a little bit alike mentality or more common than it would be with Western Europe or like maybe North America or things like that.
So you mean like whether we perceive any difference like among different
nationalities? Yeah, yeah. So to a typical candidate, a normal scenario of talking to some nearshore company that wants to buy the services is usually with German, French, Dutch, whoever. But in this case, that's a company based in Czech. And does it make a different? Do you need to sell more maybe to the candidate, or maybe they ask questions where you guys got the money from, or like I don't know how it works.
So regarding Ukraine in particular, I think that like there's something around that we like all of us have like the Slavic ethnicity, right?
I think
that there's like something that we can understand each other like much better. Regarding other nationalities, I think what really helps us is if we like make the guys at the local markets our experts. So basically, we have some hub in our structure, and the hub kind of like has the majority of the team. They also like maintain the know-how, best practice, etc. But like on the local market, there's like a local product owner and a local team that basically know the conditions, the alternative applications that people are using, etc. So they can like make qualified decisions, right? And I think it's much like about listening to each other, because there will be always some differences, even with like developers outside EU. Like the culture is totally different. But like if you kind of listen to each other, that like, okay, so the hub has some like best practice, and this is what made them successful in other markets. But like the hub also listens from the local markets that, okay, this doesn't work in Ukraine, or this doesn't work in another country like Poland or Czech Republic. Maybe tweak this feature a bit. It's a win-win situation, because then some of the features that, for example, would work in Poland or in Ukraine could work on other markets as well, right? And so you don't have to like achieve like 100% standardization, even though it will be like very heavy. You should also like leave some room for like the local development and ownership over initiatives that make sense only there.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. I often, talking to my colleagues or maybe some potential clients of ours, I refer to your LinkedIn post written like maybe a couple of months ago about you with humor categorizing the vendors who work in outsourcing, nearshoring, and things like that. And that time, if you remember, I commented that I'll pay you back with the categorization of clients.
I'm still waiting for it.
Exactly, and I'll do this, and I can say on the camera that I'll do this. I think I'm halfway done, but it's still like sometimes requires a little bit of inspiration, which I don't always have. But the question is, can you imagine or think from our side, from the vendor side, which types of clients may exist, and to which type do you think Twisto gets to, or you as a CTO?
Yeah. So you will definitely have to be like back me up on this one, because you know, like it's been about 3 years like when I'm on the other side of the table. But still, you'll probably link the original post, but like I was trying to really like nitpick or make fun of some of the like negatives around the vendors, and the same like goes for the clients, right? So I was thinking about this like on my plane trip here, and probably like the first one that I want to mention are I would call this category something like slowpokes, and it would be, and I've encountered it myself when I was a vendor. I sometimes also know that like at the beginning of some relationships we can be bad at this as well, but it's like the feedback cycle, right? Mm-hmm. So if you make it too slow, the market is now super dynamic, and if you just like give the feedback like after 1 week, 2 weeks or something like that, it's not going to happen, right? So both sides suffer. So like being slow is probably one of the category. Then I was thinking the second one is like pretty much about onboarding. So I would call this category something like life followers, like, last in, first out, because like when you hire a great guy and it ends with the recruiting and you just don't invest in onboarding, like the relationship will end in a couple of weeks or maybe a month, because once again, both sides will be frustrated, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't invest in onboarding, even if it's like provided by an e-shoring service, it doesn't work out. Yeah. Other negatives that I've seen would be things like wafflers. So someone who's like very indecisive and just gives you mixed messages when it comes to profile of the candidate, and also kind of, okay, so I would like to have him, but maybe like for less money, maybe different role, etc. So this is also something like that, and maybe just the last one that I was thinking about are really people that I would call like maybe Scrooges or something like that, because I know that sometimes on a client's perspective there's the expectation that you will have the developers like for the same price, right, as you would recruit themselves, but the agency or the vendor oftentimes, or not oftentimes, always have like some other costs that they need to invest in it, right? So you kind of need to balance it out according to the local market and also the vendor himself.
Perfect.
So, well, what about you? Do you have any?
What I will say right now is that thanks a lot for these four, because you see, I'm another step closer to finalizing my article, and I'll definitely put these four into the list. I'll quote you. I'll send it all to you. If people complain, that will be going your side.
We have to improve the naming thought.
Because I like those. So maybe we can reflect a little bit on those, but I like them very, very sharp. Yeah. Perfect. Continuing this conversation, we touched up, and this very good that you mentioned the recruiting stage and then onboarding stage and things like that. Often when we speak about like all the R's, three R's of nearshoring, that's relationship, recruiting and retention, the client side is often putting a huge focus on recruiting, because to many, they think it's like 90% of work, maybe 80% of work, but then they are not as careful, as dedicated on the other parts of it. Why do you think it is so to the businesses who come for nearshoring, that they focus only on recruiting but not on anything else?
So, like, first of all, I would probably like to mention that we have it different. So we have it the other way around. And the thing is that in our case, developers are collaborating pretty closely with the product owner. So they are like a conversation partner, and they also like help shaping the assignment. This way, if the person, like, you know, if we just brought in like 30 developers, it wouldn't make that much sense, because they wouldn't be like onboarded, they wouldn't be that long with us to actually have their say into the process. So I think that what makes the difference is whether you've got just like some very clearly specified work, and the task for the developers is, guys, just turn it into code, right? And if you have it like that, and you don't want the assignment to be challenged by developers, you know, or you just like want to make it happen, then it totally makes sense to bring in more people and increase the headcount. But if you work more in like an iterative manner, and really like product guys are closely collaborating with the devs, then like bringing more people, just bringing more people and not paying any attention and having high fluctuation wouldn't make sense, right? So for us, it's really important to have the guys stay long with us, because they like gradually gain expertise, and even with like lower headcounts, we are able to achieve the same results as someone with like teams of double the size. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm.
So like I think that really the difference is between, you know, just do this task versus like help me also like you know, reshape the initiative so that it really works with the customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On this matter, would you agree that if you see a person, anyone would understand that this person needs to be HR'd, like, you know, having a little conversation, how things are going, if everything is okay and so on. But if you do not physically see a person, if one is in another country, on a screen, on a Skype window or something, this feeling of a manager may be not as strong. And that's why maybe some of the businesses may be ignoring the essence of HR work, retention work, with their remote team. Would you agree on that?
So depends. I think that the personal contact is still like very, very important. And even in our teams, we really like support that the guys like will meet at least at the beginning, because it creates like some personal touch or feeling. However, currently we offer like all of the setups. So like, you know, the teams themselves pick whether they want to work like remotely in some hybrid regime or like totally on site, right? And I think that this is kind of like, if the ownership is in the hands of the developers, also like the teams and their like managers, then this problem, I wouldn't say like doesn't exist, because we still like need to like bring the people together so that they meet face to face. But then like the difference is a bit blurred, right? Because everyone works under the same rules. And it's the same thing that I was like saying about like the culture, at least at Twisto, that basically, no matter whether it's like a third party vendor or whether it's an internal employee, they all have the same rules, right? So if we've got like developers, I don't know, like in Poland, and some of them are internal, some of them are from another vendor, like they decide as a team, do we want to stay in the office or do we want to be distributed?
Okay, good. Then overall, I think I heard a little bit of how you handle that problem, but maybe once again as a separate question. You have teams around the world. Maybe they are mostly now in Europe, like, you know, still like, you know, within 1-2 hours of time zones, but overall it's still like geographically distributed team. How an organizational structure should change in technological department to actually manage this remotely spread teams around the world? Or maybe there are no differences, just like, you know, just as it would be in the same office.
So probably, and maybe like I'll be repeating myself, but like the first point I was mentioning are really like the delivery teams, right? So like there are some units. We never like want some like lone wolves working just individually, because it probably wouldn't be good for them either. It wouldn't be good for us, because we really like teams that, or units that are like together in the country. The same holds true for local markets, right? So if we have a market, there's a team lead. He has like his team of developers, and they are responsible for a particular area. It could be even the local market. The engineering manager, who's like responsible for multiple delivery teams, definitely should like meet these guys, right? So even if we are starting a team in a new location, he's like spends some time there till like there's a new team lead like nominated, till like everything is set up, and then he can like move elsewhere or just go there on a regular basis. But at the beginning, it's really important just to transfer the culture, etc. And as I've mentioned, it should go like the other way as well, right? Because the problem, or where we don't want to be, is when everything would be directed, say, from the Czech Republic, right? Or we would be just saying, okay, so guys, this is like the roadmap, and now like you are just the guys implementing it. This would be the wrong model, right? You rather want ownership in the countries, that they know, okay, so we are the ones who are like running Twisto or Zip like in this country. We are responsible for the delivery, for coming up with the new features, etc. And whenever we need help or some support, we can like ask the guys from the hub, from the like best practices, etc. Right? But we are the ones driving the market. One thing, maybe on top of like the product delivery itself, that we need to deal with are things like operations and also like customer support. But and by operations, I mean also like IT operations. some of the countries might require us to like have the data inside the country, also like have local customer support, which we pretty much like, because it's nice that if you like have some trouble, the person speaks your language, yeah, right? Yeah, it's yeah. always nice to have. And also, like if there's the data and there's the infrastructure in that particular country, we also need some people who are able to operate it. So also like DevOps teams, but also like ops teams, let it be like technical or customer support.
With your nearshoring intents, what is the main driving factor for you? What is the business reason why you think about nearshoring from time to time, or you already went for nearshoring in development? Cost, mm-hmm. availability, diversity, maybe something else.
So I would say that like for us it's really the speed we are scaling. So we just need partners for that, right? And if there's a company that has like the same DNA, the same culture, they are like about the size, same size of us, and we kind of just understand each other, it's just like good to support each other in this way, right? Because usually nearshoring, or not usually, always nearshoring vendors are looking like for new clients, and we for example have a lot of initiatives on the table that drive our business results, but oftentimes we get into the phase where we are like unable, or like we kind of do the line or cut the initiatives that we are implementing and not based on the resources that we have available. And if there's and we also don't want to like burn down our developers by doing only onboarding, right? So if there's a partner who already like has a team, we can onboard like the team lead or the manager of that team, and just like transfer all of our know-how, technology, etc., and he will pass it to an existing team. This is just a dream come true, right? So I think that you know, like basically we can, like for us it's a question of sourcing enough capacities to achieve our business results, and if there are like people who can help us with that and also, you know, like benefit from it as well because they are part of the story, right? And they are part of delivering of the product, this is awesome. Yeah, and it's like totally different than just trying to do it on your own, right? Because as I've mentioned, like a team that already worked together in the past has like totally different delivery that someone who's just starting from scratch, or a team consisting of random guys.
Okay. What advice would you want to give to the candidates applying to jobs at the business who is located not in the country? So to the candidates who apply from all over the world, to, for example, to your company.
Mm-hmm. So if someone just like reacts to a job posting at Twisto or something like that, mm-hmm. and it's like totally new country. Mm. So like we are pretty used to at this point of actually like hiring anywhere in the world, right? So that's not an issue. If we have a high quality candidate, we probably like think first. So like first of all, it's about the person, right? So like we do the screening, and is he good? Second of all, like the market itself, is Twisto present on that market? So if the person can really like use the application, like debug it on the go, and also like spot some of the mistakes and fix it himself, it makes a bit of a difference, because the ownership is much greater than when you are just developing something for someone else. And the third one, and it's like the candidate cannot influence that, but it's also important, is like whether we are really like able to employ this person, right? Because we can work with contractors, we can work with full-time employees, but if the country is like outside EU, and even like if it's outside countries like neighboring with the EU, it becomes more and more difficult to actually like start a collaboration with the person. And this is like back to the team's discussion, right? Like if there's a business case for it, that we should like either open up a new office there, or just like start some unit so that we can like employ the whole team, it's much stronger than just like the individual developer, right? Mm-hmm. But generally, like you know, we don't make a difference in the screening process. It's more like that there are like some, say, objective factors that we need to consider when either like offering or not offering collaboration.
Okay. However, one thing is that like with Zip, this might differ a lot, right? Because now we have really like global presence, and also like, you know, when just listening to myself in my mind, I'm already like switching from the mode that we are thinking more like mid-Europe or just European Union, and now we are really also switching ourselves at Twisto to the like global by default thinking, right? So that we like we were used to, okay, just do it like for Europe, and now we have like this large network, so this is like a learning exercise for us as well. We like think bigger.
Yeah, and well, obviously that's a good change with you guys, but also if you had a candidate that you were speaking to, of course, like maybe not you, but your team leads or whoever, anything that a team lead can prepare herself or himself with to this interview to somehow present better, or usually it's like, you know, the technical assessment, then like, you know, still a chemistry thing, and based on this, it's a decision made.
Ah, okay. So like, maybe I can like just introduce the interviewing process and then follow up from that. But like with us, really the first interview is about like assessing like the tech skills, but also cultural fit. So basically like two-way street, where we want to get as much as we can about the candidate regarding like whether he would be a good fit with Twisto, but also technically, and also allow the candidate to actually like get to know us, right? Because we always say that like shaking hands, not shaking hands, both are totally okay, because objective criteria made us do that. But like if we shake hands and after like 3 weeks you will find out that you don't like Twisto, then like something was wrong, right? So we kind of want it to be like two-way street, right? Then even with team leads, we are doing like a technical assessment consisting like of system design questions and also like some live coding. However, even with the live coding, even with the system design questions, we really go for tasks that are taken from our backlog, or at least like similar to things that we really work on. So we don't like things like algorithmic tasks or things that might be like more typical. We really want the candidate to be like hands-on and demonstrate the skills that he would utilize at Twisto. Right. And like specifically about team leads, like what's important for us is like the tandem between like a team lead and the engineering manager, which is like maybe in the hierarchy like his superior, but also with the team itself, right? Because ultimately when we are setting up some OKRs for the team lead, it's not like his personal delivery, it's not like how his personal pull requests look like. It's really like what's the delivery and expectation management of the whole team, right? So this is like back to the previous discussion, that basically the team lead is not like evaluated for like just his own contributions, but basically like how the team moves on, right? So like, yeah, so you can expect these kind of questions that we would have for a team lead, basically how he can contribute to that at least.
Okay, then maybe a very precise question. If a candidate was playing good in Counter-Strike, would it benefit applying to Twisto?
So definitely, because like there are some team, like we basically have a team that plays like Counter-Strike on a professional basis, right? So depending on who you talk, it might be like a huge advantage.
Okay, I see. Perfect. Then yeah, I think the candidates should make a research a little bit, maybe listen to the recruiter who would advise them on how to find common grounds with the interviewer.
Yeah.
Perfect. And probably the last question, we have watchers who are thinking about nearshoring, they are not certain, they don't know, they're afraid. What advice would you give to businesses who are not yet doing nearshoring but thinking about that?
So like first of all, and I think we've mentioned it before as well, it's the cultural fit. You know, like if the if like Twisto, like now we are larger, but if it would be like 200 people, 80 developers, and like the nearshoring agency would be used to sourcing like for teams of like 500 developers or 1,000 developers, probably it wouldn't be the best fit, because they are used to totally other scale, a totally different approach, right? So probably like about the same size and like same profile of the candidates, and really like meet the guys to know whether there's some chemistry between the two sides. So this would be probably the first thing. And Another one would be really like fast feedback loops, because it's also like important, because at the beginning it never works out of the box. It's always like, you know, getting to know each other, because each company has different requirements. So there needs to like a lot of debugging needs to happen before like it could be really like launched and full up to speed. And third is like maybe keep your number of partners limited to like the highest like performing ones or where the best match is. Because it requires a lot of dedication, right? Still, like, if you start this partnership with a nearshoring agency, there's someone on their side, but also on your side, who's like a key account manager or someone who's really like keeping the flow going, right? And who's really dedicated to this topic, and it's not for free, right? So just don't expect that you know, like you will come to Mobile Unity and you will tell them like, we need those guys, and then, you know, business done. You know, and I never hear about you like only after you return with like 30 developers. Yeah, yeah. Like it needs to be two-way, and you need also like dedicated capacities mm-hmm. on your side to actually make it work. So no free lunch. Yeah.
Perfect. Good. So we listened to Jakub's take on all the nearshoring items that we were discussing now. In general and in a nutshell, it's all about the culture fit, your capacity to invest some time, and finding this right person, right company to work with, to be scaling faster, to be growing faster, and to gain other advantages of nearshoring model. But again, probably this is not for everyone, but rather to those who are ready to go through the whole process of it. Thanks for watching us, and I hope to see you next time. Bye.